entertain a motion to come out of recess into public session.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Deaver, second. Mr. Cole, any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We're now back into public session. Purpose will be for change of zone application 1759. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I will read the rules of procedure for County Council zoning hearings. When County Council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because Council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Each application shall be announced. The director will review with Council the minutes and testimony from the P&Z hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record, along with any exhibits introduced at the planning and zoning hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, Council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless Council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front, stand at the speaker stand, and state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign in the witness sheet. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to Mr. Lank, and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, Council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, Council will do likewise. And we have a hearing this afternoon. Mr. Lank, it's Change of Zone 1759, Osprey Point D, LLC.
Yes, thank you. This is an application of Osprey Point DLLC to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MR-RPC medium density residential district residential planned community for a certain parcel of land lying being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 126.87 acres, more or less, for land lying west of Old Landing Road, Road 274, 1.2 miles south of Warrington Road, being Road 275, with a 911 address of 20836 Old Landing Road, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, with a tax map ID of District 334, Map 18, Parcel Number 83. For the benefit of the record, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on January 8th, 2015. Before I start, just for everyone to be aware, the applicants did provide a somewhat revised exhibit booklet and a revised set of drawings. They have reduced the size of the project by 10 lots or units to 340 instead of 350. The Kell Council members have a copy of that revised site plan and the revised exhibit booklet. They have also been provided with a copy of a packet provided by Mr. Fuqua, the attorney on behalf of the applicants, which makes reference to letters, the comprehensive plan, certain pages within the comp plan, the county zoning map, and a zoning ordinance in reference to the purpose of the MR district and the RPC district. We also received yesterday a letter from DelDOT in response to questions raised by the county 5-page letter. All the council members have a copy of that also. It is a part of the record. For the benefit of the commission's public hearing record, there was an exhibit booklet, basically the same or similar to what the council had before them. This application, as you're all aware, was originally advertised to be a public hearing on December 2nd, or October 23rd with the commission, and on December 2nd, 2014 before council. And due to some questions raised about the notices given to adjoining property owners and property owners within 200 foot, we did re-advertise and reschedule for today. And there were 634 public notices sent out, of which 20 mail returns have been received to date. That number has not changed, to the best of my knowledge. We also received in the public hearing process with a commission 143 letters, emails in opposition, one letter in support. To date, as of this morning, we'd received 25 additional letters, emails since the public hearing on January 8th before the commission. During the public hearing, the commission did hear that Robert Marshall, the landowner, was present with representation, and they all gave testimony and presented their application. There are several pages in my report from the Planning and Zoning Commission. Two members from DelDOT, or representatives of DelDOT, were also present. That was Bill Brockenbrow and Mark Cotte, and they gave some summation of what they reviewed to date. Mr. Fuqua provided 10 suggested proposed findings of fact. He also provided proposed conditions of approval for consideration by the council and the commission at that time. There were multiple parties, primarily represented by William Dunn, Esquire, in opposition to the application. There was some questions raised by many parties in their opposition. Some of the questions raised were responded to by the applicant's attorney and representatives. I'll get to the end here somewhere. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission did choose to ask for a show of hands for those in opposition. A lot of you had left. There were 24 present. We checked the sign-in sheet and established that there were approximately 110 present in opposition. So we didn't forget you. We used a sign-in sheet to verify. So if you didn't sign in, you probably didn't get counted. The commission discussed the application. Mr. Robertson, assistant county attorney, stated that the record should be left open for at least the conservation district comments about the appropriate regulations to apply to this application. Basically, that was whether it was to be grandfathered or whether it was going to be based under the old regulations, and DelDOT comments relating to the traffic operational analysis. There was a motion by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Mr. Smith, carried unanimously to defer action for further consideration to leave the record open for the conservation district reference to grandfathering of the project and for DelDOT comments on the traffic operational analysis. The applicant's response to the DelDOT comments, and then that public written comments relating to those comments will be accepted for 20 days after the announcement of receipt of all those comments by the Planning and Zoning Commission. That was a motion carried 4-0. As far as the receipt of those comments, I have to announce it during public session. That public session will be the meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. It should be on the 12th. It will be introduced, I think it's next Thursday, the 12th. We should have received all those comments. Then you would have 20 days to respond to those comments from those agencies. And I believe that's all I have, other than to say that all of the letters of opposition have been received by the council, by emails. There is a multitude of those comments. They are on file. Available for review by any party, whether they be council members, commission members, or the public. So they are available for review.
Okay, anything else, Mr. Lang?
That's all.
Okay, any questions from council?
Yeah, I understand you say there will be entire commission hearing in the future on this.
Well, it will not be a hearing. The commission will May it be announced that the records have been received. They will review them. They will then leave the record open for 20 days after announcement of those comments so the public can respond to those comments in writing.
That's, okay, so the public would have...
Then we'll wait 20 days. The first available commission meeting, the commission will review or possibly make a decision, a recommendation to council.
And will that be open to the public?
Open to the public, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All their actions are open to the public.
Right, thank you.
Okay, if there are no other questions, Mr. Fuqua. I understand on behalf of the president that you were going to limit your comments to 5 minutes.
Or less.
Or.
It's his birthday.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen. For the record, my name is James Fuqua. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I am representing the applicant, Osprey Point D, LLC. With me is Robert Marshall, who is the principal of the applicant and the owner of the property. Also with me is Zach Crouch and DJ Hughes of the engineering firm of Davis, Bowen, and Friedel, and also John Hines of John Hines and Associates. For the record, we have submitted an exhibit booklet, which includes an environmental assessment and public facilities report, and a summary of the responses to the considerations listed in Section 99.9C of the subdivision ordinance. That's the booklet that I think you have. And also an exhibit that's titled the Comprehensive Plan and Zoning Ordinance Exhibits, which I also believe you have and which I'll be referring to in my presentation. I would like to outline somewhat how we are going to present our application so you know what to expect. I'm going to present some general information about the location of our property and various aspects of our proposal. In addition, I'm going to explain how our application complies with the applicable land use regulations of Sussex County. Zach Crouch will then review the site plan and discuss our impact on the wetland, stormwater management, and other engineering aspects of the proposal. John Hines will discuss the soil analysis that he's performed, and DJ Hughes will discuss our traffic impact and our actions to mitigate it as determined and required by DLDOT. Lastly, I will address the issues raised by the opponents at the planning and zoning hearing and review the appropriate legal principles to be utilized by the council in making a land use decision. Going back to Mr. Moore's comment, I know that everyone would prefer to have a simple, short hearing so we could all get out of here very quickly. However, that is not going to happen today.
I'm surprised.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
I think looking at the crowd, I think I would agree with you, sir.
This is the applicant's one and only opportunity to present the merits of the application and to create a record on which you will base your decision. So then obviously, of course, the opponents will have the same opportunity. As you already know, and certainly as you can see, this application has generated a great deal of interest and vocal opposition. As I have stated on many past occasions, if our zoning application was a popularity contest, we would lose. In fact, if most zoning applications were a popularity contest, most zoning applications would be denied. It can be understood, most people who already reside in a certain area would prefer that see that area remain the same. They would like to see it just stay that way and prohibit new development. That's human nature, and I certainly understand that. However, as you are well aware, a land use application is not a popularity contest. Land use decisions are based on the applicable land use laws and regulations, which set forth specific criteria to guide the landowner and the county council in determining legally permitted development. I will be reviewing that criteria in my presentation. I mentioned this is my first opportunity to meet and to present a rezoning application to Councilman Arlette. and I think it's going to be a very good introduction for him to one of the county council's most important responsibilities, and that is the right of the property owner to utilize his property rights under the law, and balancing that with the rights of residents who live in the area. And this will be a textbook example of that. Now, I would mention, often from my experience in these types of applications, the developer is accused of being motivated by greed to acquire huge profits at the expense of the current residents and the environment. And the property owner, the applicant, he normally counters that with the position that the opponents are motivated really to deny others the same use of his property that the opponents already enjoy, basically under what is referred to as NIMBYs, or not in my backyard, motives. Now, while some individuals may hold those opinions, my experience in land use applications find that those attitudes are oversimplified and incorrect. What this type of land use application really involves is a landowner utilizing his lawful property rights for an opportunity to obtain a use permitted by, again, the applicable land use regulations, and balanced against that is the interest of existing residents concerned with the impact of the proposal on the use of their own property. And that basically is what you're going to be hearing today and ultimately deciding. Both those positions are legitimate positions, and they're the positions that are explored on a zoning application. And ultimately, after hearing the positions of the applicant and the opponents, it's the county council's responsibility to determine the facts based on substantial evidence in the record and to apply the applicable existing land use law as written and as interpreted by the courts. Now, I think everyone here knows that the council will perform its responsibility, and we're confident that based on the facts and the law, as you will be hearing today, that our application is entitled to your approval. As far as the actual application, this is an application to rezone a 126.8-acre parcel of land to an MR-RPC, a medium-density residential planned community, as that zoning designation exists in the zoning code. What's being proposed is a development of 340 residential units, consisting of 160 single-family detached lots and 180 townhouses. In addition, there would be a recreational amenity center. Under an RPC, an applicant can request a limited amount of commercial space. No commercial space is being requested in this application. The property is located on the west side of Old Landing Road, south of Fairway Drive. The site currently is and has been since the early 1960s, the Old Landing Golf Course, and there's also a restaurant that's been located on the site. Mr. Marshall, the owner of the property, has owned it in his own name since 1991, and the property has been owned by his family for over a century. The property borders Fairway Drive and Old Landing Woods development on the north, and this is Fairway Drive right here, our boundary, and then the development is around here. That's Old Landing Woods. As was somewhat mentioned, but I want to make sure it's clear for the benefit of any of the owners in Old Landing Woods who may not be aware of it, the site plan has been revised to address concerns that were raised at the planning and zoning hearing. Our original site plan had 12 lots fronting on Old Landing Road, on Fairway Drive, directly across Fairway Drive from existing homes in the Woods development. The revised site plan that was submitted to the planning and zoning office removed those 12 lots from the site plan, and in place there created a 60-foot open space buffer on...
Point that out while you're over there. Mm-hmm. Show us
what... That's what I thought he was going to do. Okay, gotcha.
So there were 12 lots there fronting on Fairway Drive. They've been removed, and a 60-foot open space buffer has been created on our property on our side of Fairway Drive.
A vegetated buffer?
Well, actually, that was woods along a certain golf course hole,
right.
Mature woods, and those trees would remain.
Okay.
Zach Crouch will explain that in more detail when he goes over the site plan. And as I said, I did inform Mr. Lank by letter what was being done, and a copy of that letter was sent to Mr. Morgante, who's the president of the Woods HOA. In total, the change was there were 14 lots removed. Four of those lots were relocated internally within the proposed plan, so it was a net reduction of 10 lots. So our application, as I said, is for 160 single-family lots rather than 170 and 180 townhouses. Getting back to the location, on the south side of the property,
where's his mic?
It would be down here. The site borders a residential development there, which is the old landing development. The west side of the property, which would be to the left, it borders Arnell Creek. And the east side of the property, which would be to the right, borders Old Landing Road. On the other side of Old Landing Road are residential developments, the Rehoboth Bay Community, which is a large manufactured home development, and the Sawgrass South development, which is an MRRPC development approved by the county for 282 residential units, which is also comprised of single-family dwellings and townhouses. As to our site itself, a wetland delineation of the property was performed by Environmental Resources, Inc. That study indicated the site contains 17.25 acres of state title wetlands and 4.41 acres of federal Section 404 non-title wetlands. The wetland delineation was submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers, and a preliminary jurisdictional determination was issued by the Army Corps on December 23rd, 2014, and a copy of that letter has been submitted for the record. The proposed development will provide, at a minimum, a 50-foot buffer from all tidal waters and tidal wetlands, as required by the Sussex County Zoning Ordinance. As to federal jurisdictional Section 404 wetlands, there are no required buffers or setbacks from federal wetlands required under federal, state, or Sussex County ordinances or regulations. The opponents to our application have argued that in the PLUS review letter, the watershed assessment section of DENREC recommended a minimum of 100-foot buffer from all wetlands. And I just want to mention, so that you understand, that in the PLUS letter, basically there are two parts. The first part addresses code requirements and agency permitting requirements, and these are items that are required to be complied with, and all of those items will be fully complied with by our application. The second part of the PLUS letter is actually under a heading that says recommendations and additional information. The recommendation for a 100-foot buffer is under this section of the PLUS letter. And the PLUS letter itself states on page 16 that these items are suggestions, and these suggestions do not represent state code requirements and are in no way required. I also want to mention that in 2008, DENREC issued regulations requiring 100-foot buffers from certain water bodies and wetlands. That regulation was challenged in a court action, and it was declared invalid by the Superior Court of the State of Delaware. DENREC appealed that decision to the Delaware Supreme Court, who affirmed the lower court and held those regulations invalid. And the plaintiff that filed that action to overturn that was, in fact, the Sussex County Council. So there is no requirement for a buffer, and the council actually had that overturned when DENREC actually tried to do it. So as far as the state title wetlands are concerned, our development will have a minimum 50-foot buffer as required by the county. As far as the federal wetlands, although there are no buffers required, our development will provide a voluntary 25-foot buffer from all federal non-title wetlands. As to utilities, the development will be served by Tidewater Utilities, Inc., as you know, is a public water company, and they will be providing domestic water use and fire protection. County sewer will be provided as part of the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. Comments from the Sussex County Engineering Department stated that the sewer system was designed, or the sewer system design assumption for this parcel of land was 4 units to the acre. That would amount to 507 units. We are proposing 340 units, 2.68 units to the acre, which is significantly less than the county's design assumption. The county engineering comments confirm that the site is in a county-operated sewer district, that wastewater capacity is available, that the sewer connection rate is $5,500 per EDU, which would amount to $1,870,000 for our proposed 340 units. That appropriate sewer system connection points are available, and that the proposed project is within the planning study and design assumptions for sewer service. Electricity will be provided by Delaware Electric Co-op. The property is in the Cape Henlopen School District and in the fire protection area of the Rehoboth Beach Volunteer Fire Company. There are no federal or threatened species associated with our site, and the development will provide significant economic impact through the creation of development, construction, and sales-related employment to county residents, as well as revenue to the county through transfer taxes, property taxes, and sewer impact connection and use charges. Now, as I mentioned, your decision is not to be based on popularity, but on the applicable land use statutes and ordinances enacted by the state and Sussex County. And as I will explain, we believe that criteria fully supports and justifies our application for approval of this 340-unit MRRPC. As a starting point, and I'm going to be referring to the exhibit Comprehensive Plan and Zoning Ordinance exhibits. Pursuant to a Delaware law, which was commonly referred to as the Quality of Life Act, which was adopted in 1988, Sussex County was required to prepare and adopt a comprehensive land use plan. And the purpose of that comp plan was to determine where development was appropriate, to direct development to those areas, and to set land use policies to implement those goals. Under the state law, a proposed land use request must be in conformity with the comprehensive plan's land use map and with other regulations enacted to implement the plan. In fact, the law states that the land use map shall have the force of law, and no development shall be permitted except in conformity with the plan's map. So if a proposed development does not conform to the comp plan's map, it should not be permitted. Conversely, if a proposed development is in conformity with the map, then it is following the direction and planning of the county, and if it complies with the applicable regulations, it is entitled to be approved. Now, in focusing on our application, I would like to refer to the exhibit that I mentioned, and I'd like to refer to Section C of that exhibit, which is some pages from the comp plan. And these sections of the comp plan that I'm going to mention speak for themselves, so I'm just going to read just a short portion of each of
these. Mr. Fulcoy, if I may, packet, is that what you're referring
yeah.
to, or the booklet? Packet.
The packet.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah, and it's Exhibit C. I have C marked on there. Sorry about the order of this, but...
That's okay. There's a tab C on here, too. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Thank you.
So on the section C, the first page there is page 3-7. It talks, again, about the importance of the future land use plan. And it says, the future land use plan, also called the future land use element, is probably the most influential part of this comprehensive plan. The county zoning regulations are intended to carry out the future land use plan. The future land use plan also designates which part of the county are to be considered growth areas. If you turn to the next page, which is page 3-8, again under the caption, the structure of the future land use plan, it states the future land use plan divides Sussex County into two types of planning areas, growth areas and rural areas. And then you can see under growth areas, there's two areas listed that are highlighted, the environmentally sensitive development area and the mixed residential area. So both those areas are growth areas. If you turn to the next page, which is actually two pages, 315 and 316, the first page, the environmentally sensitive development area, if you turn to the second page of that, 316, it states that the following major guidelines should apply to future growth in the environmentally sensitive area and under permitted uses. The plan states that a range of housing types should be permitted in the environmentally sensitive areas, including single-family homes, townhouses, and multifamily units. And then if you go down to the toward the bottom of that where it says infrastructure, it does say that central water and sewer facilities are strongly encouraged. It then picks up with the mixed residential area, which is the other area I mentioned. And then if you turn to page 317, it again states under permitted uses that the full range of housing types are appropriate in these residential areas, including single-family homes, townhouses, and multifamily units. Under densities in the mixed residential area, it states the current densities in these areas range from a maximum of 4 homes per acre for single-family detached housing to a maximum of 12 dwelling units per acre for multifamily housing. And again, it notes that central water and sewer facilities are strongly encouraged. Now, if you refer to Exhibit B, the first page of Exhibit B is the color code index of the growth areas. The second page is an enlargement of the comp plan's future land use map for the area where our site is located. And I have designated with stars the approximate location of our property. And as you can see, the majority of our site is in the peach-colored area, with a smaller portion only in the environmentally sensitive development area. If you refer back to the color code index, the peach area is the mixed residential area under the comp plan. And as I said, both the mixed residential area and the environmentally sensitive development area are designated growth areas as set forth on page 3-8 of the comp plan. So our property is located in growth areas. Next, if you refer to Exhibit A, I requested that Mr. Lank verify the designations of our site under the comp plan's future land use map, which he did in his letter of July 28, 2014. And as you can see, Mr. Lank estimated that 60 to 75% of our site is located in the mixed residential area. Now, that is very significant that our site is in the growth area, certainly, but it's particularly important that the majority of our site is located in the mixed residential area. Since our property will be served as part of a Sussex County sewer district and will have central public water, the residential densities recognized in the land use plan for the mixed residential area would be appropriate for the majority of our site. And as stated in the plan, those densities are a maximum of 4 units 4 homes per acre for single-family detached and 12 dwelling units per acre for townhouses. Now, the density we are proposing of 340 residential units on 126.8 acres is a gross density of approximately 2.68 units per acre, and very significantly less than the density recognized as appropriate by the comp plan. Even the county engineer's sewer system design assumptions for our parcel was 4 units per acre. So our density of 340 units per acre, again, is significantly less than the density anticipated by the comp plan and planned for by the Sussex County Engineering Department. Next, if you would refer to Section E. Section E is the Section 115.28 of the zoning ordinance. This states the purpose of the MR zoning district, which is to provide for medium density residential development in areas which are or which are expected to become generally urban in character, but where sanitary sewers and public water supplies may or may not be available at the time of construction. Now, as to our application, county sewer and public water are currently available, and with the considerable residential development that already exists surrounding our site, the area is already urban in character. The surrounding residential developments include single-family homes, manufactured homes, and townhouses. And in fact, our property is basically the only remaining undeveloped parcel of land in that area of Old Landing Road. The second page of Exhibit E, which is Section 115.118 of the Zoning Code, this is the purpose section for an RPC. The purpose is to encourage large-scale developments to create a superior living environment through unified developments and using design ingenuity while protecting existing and future development. And as Zach Crouch will explain, our proposed development is consistent with the purpose of the RPC designation. In fact, our requested MRRPC zoning designation is totally consistent with the character of the surrounding area. If you refer to Exhibit D, page 1 is the Sussex County Zoning Map Index. Page 2, again, is an enlargement of the Sussex County zoning map for the area surrounding our site. I, again, have indicated the approximate location of our site with red stripes over a white background. And as you can see, our property is basically surrounded by lands colored in orange, which, if you refer back to the index, they are lands currently zoned MR, medium density residential. And as you can see, they are located on both sides of Old Landing Road. So our requested MR zoning will be consistent with and identical to the existing zoning of land surrounding our site. In effect, it's what we would normally refer to as an MR infill in an MR area. So the MR zoning is totally consistent and appropriate for this parcel. A main point that was raised by the opposition to our application is that our proposal is out of character with the area. And I do want to address that allegation in some detail. If our application for an MR residential plan community in that area was the first application of that type along Old Landing Road, the opposition's position might have some basis. However, the facts show that that argument is totally without any merit. As to the appropriateness of an MRRPC development in this area, the precedent has already been set. Directly across Old Landing Road from our site is the Sawgrass South development, which is an existing MRRPC approved by the county. Now, I do want to make it clear that I am in no way intending to be critical of Sawgrass South, which I think is an attractive residential development providing a superior community in the area. And in fact, it's the same intention of our proposed community in that area. What I do want to do, however, is compare our proposal with the existing Sawgrass development to show that our development will be in character with what has already been approved and currently exists next to our site. And just so you can follow along with me, I want to give you a comparison sheet so that you can see what I'm referring to. And I have copies of this that I'll hand to Mr. Moore.
Thanks, sir.
On the comparison sheet, Sawgrass South is the left-hand column. The proposed Osprey Point is the right-hand column. So just going down the information that I have here, you can see that the gross acreage of the both sites are similar. The second one lists the federal and state wetlands. Sawgrass has 63.15 acres. Our site has 21.84 acres. So Sawgrass has approximately three times the amount of wetlands within the development. The net acres, this would be the total acres less the wetlands. And again, that's 76 acres for Sawgrass and 105 for Osprey Point. The gross density, this would be the total acreage, or the total number of units divided by the total acreage. Sawgrass is 2 units per acre. Our proposal is 2.6 units of the acre. And that was one of the arguments the opponents raised, that our density compared to Sawgrass is more, and that is correct as far as the gross density is concerned. However, it's also very misleading. The gross acreage, hence the gross density, includes the wetlands. And as you know, under federal, state, and even county regulations, building in those areas are totally prohibited. So logically, the unbuildable wetland area should be deducted from the gross acreage to determine the actual net buildable area and density. So while the gross density is what I stated, if you subtract the unbuildable protected wetlands, and this is the next column or the next section here, the net density, the units divided by the non-wetland acres, Sawgrass is 3.7 units of the acre. Our proposal is 3.2 units of the acre. The next column basically shows the types of units. Both developments are comprised of a mixture of single-family homes and townhouses. Sawgrass has 282 homes, composed of 106 single-family homes, or 37.5% of the development, and 176 townhouses, or 62.5% of the development. Osprey Point will have a total of 340 homes, comprised of 160 single-family homes, or 47% of the development, and 180 townhouses, or 53% of the development. So our proposed development will have a lower percentage of townhouses and a higher percentage of single-family homes than Sawgrass. As far as zoning, the zoning of both developments would be identical. Both parcels were originally zoned AR1. Sawgrass was rezoned to MRRPC, and we are requesting the identical zoning. As far as the, as I already mentioned, under the comprehensive plan, Sawgrass is totally located in the environmentally sensitive development area and not in the mixed residential area. 60 to 75% of our property is located in the mixed residential area under the plan, And that is, under the plan where higher densities are deemed to be appropriate. The next section there is regarding federal wetlands. Sawgrass has no required buffer from federal 404 wetlands. And within that development, many of the lots border the wetland line. As I already mentioned, Osprey Point will voluntarily provide a 25-foot buffer from all federal wetlands. Not that it's significant, but Sawgrass has 5-foot side yard setbacks for single-family homes. We're proposing 8-foot side yard setbacks. And the average single-family lot size in Sawgrass South is 2.35 acres, or 10,237 square feet. Our average lot size is 0.21 acres, or 9,331 square feet, being fairly similar in lot size. So in summary, as compared to the existing Sawgrass South MRRPC, which is located adjacent to our site, our proposed development is a lower percentage of townhouses, a higher percentage of single-family lots, a lower net density. The majority of our site is located in the mixed residential growth area under the plan. We have a voluntary 25-foot buffer from the federal wetlands lines, and the lot sizes are comparable. So Sawgrass has set a precedent for appropriate MR development in the area, and we certainly believe Osprey Point is just as appropriate. So as to the our application for MR zoning, it's the same zoning as the land surrounding our site. As to the RPC designation, our request is consistent and similar to the existing MRRPC bordering our property. And in summary, our application is totally in accordance with the provisions and requirements of the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan and the future land use map. And with that, I will turn our presentation over to Zach Crouch.
You don't want any questions? You don't want any questions?
Oh, I'd love questions.
I mean, I have one. If I moved in here 2 years ago, how would I know that golf course is going to be developed? Where would I look? In the land use plan, the map, are you saying?
Well, any piece in Sussex County can be developed.
Any piece. I would know that if I were here 2 years. Any piece can be developed? To what extent?
To the extent the law permits. I mean, anybody has the right to seek...
I'm not questioning the rights. I'm just wondering how would they know that the golf course was going to be developed? I'm not criticizing.
I don't even know if it was going to be planned to be developed 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about Mr. Marshall's plans personally. As a new person here 2 years ago, you were saying I would not. Where would I look if I bought property there and I want to? Would I go to planning and zoning and ask them about the properties around me, and would they be able to tell me?
You'd have to go to a fortune teller, to be honest with you,
right?
Because there's no way in the world you would know that. I mean, it's any piece of land that's undeveloped potentially can be developed.
Well,
any single-family lot next to you can eventually have a house on it. That's just, reality.
I'm just kind of asking you a question that I've heard many, many times from folks who are new here. You have accurately said that the county sued DENREC about the 100-foot setbacks or buffers. I just want to make a point that I wasn't on county council at that time.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, so as I said, I'll turn our presentation over to Zach to review the site plan.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Council. For the record, I'm Zach Crouch with Davis Bowen and Friedel, professional engineer registered in the state of Delaware. This afternoon, I'm going to go over the existing conditions, proposed conditions, some of the changes we have made based on Planning Commission, and really go over the plan to address both the drainage questions out there, I will turn it over to John D. Hans to talk about the soils, and then DJ will follow up with that in reference to the traffic. As Mr. Fuqua stated, the parcel consists of 126.88 acres, which is located on Old Landing Road. Nine holes of this golf course were developed back in 1960, with the 18 coming along around 1968. During that time, there was no requirements for stormwater management. So what exists out there today, there is a couple ponds that exist out there, but there's no stormwater management. The ponds are there just for features, and that's pretty much about it. So with the development of this property, as we move forward, there's going to be some drainage issues that are going to be improved. There's no stormwater management out there as of today. So between interconnected ponds and going through both Conservation District and Denerec, the existing problems with low areas not having a positive discharge will all be addressed as part of the design process and an approval process.
Are there any fish in those ponds? The little fishies were really getting
out. I'm sure there is.
Excuse me, Mr. Fuqua, you'd indicated before the hearing that you were putting maps up on both, or the same maps on the other as well.
The same ones up there?
Okay.
So just to go over the existing conditions, there was a little bit of confusion at the planning and zoning meeting when there was an archaeological site that came up during PLUS. I got an email from Terrence Burns, which basically sent me that requirement, which I'm going to submit for the record. The email that he sent me did not show it on here. It was brought up again, and apparently he sent me the wrong one, so I'm submitting this, but on file through Denerec, through SHPO, I'm going to submit this. It basically states after a field visit, there was insufficient information for that site. So,
in other words, you couldn't find anything, right?
Okay.
The proposed site conditions, they're again in the, I'm kind of going to be referring to the booklet that we submitted that has the tabs in it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into great detail, but I will go over some of the improvements that we made based on the P&Z meeting and what that did to the overall plan itself. But as everyone knows, we had to go through the PLUS process, which is with the state, which is our first process of doing any land use application. We received the comments, we addressed the comments, and as I submitted today, there's documentation in reference to the archaeological site. We've also went through the TAC process, and there again, the TAC comments are included as tab C, which basically addresses the comments per the county, and our responses as part of our submission are in there, which basically covers the utilities that Mr. Fuqua covered as far as sewer and water. The two things that I want to kind of talk about now is based on Planning Commission, there were some lots that were located. Along Fairway, which were 12 lots, but the road itself is owned by the developer. So looking at those lots and the concerns at the Planning Commission, we figured we would actually move these lots. We actually reduced it by 10. We provided a buffer, which is it's an existing buffer between Fairway and the back of these lots, and there's a 60-foot buffer now in this area. As Mr. Pupoy stated, on December 23rd, we did get the letter from the Army Corps of Engineers in reference to the wetlands delineations that were done. The original plan showed a pond in the back right-hand corner on Fairway being wetlands, but the Corps is not taking jurisdiction over that, so we removed two lots back here, in which there, again, that was some concerns about residents here. We actually included a stormwater management pond in this area, and actually the lots 1 through 5 on Country Club Drive, we increased that buffer and also the stormwater management facility in that area. So the
exactly. Unless we got that other speaker, it probably works if you just talk real loud. That'll probably pick you up. That seems to be working.
Right. Just be sure and speak either there or at the podium, not between the spots.
Sure.
Aim your voice. I think everybody hears
you. So the latest plan that we have now, we're showing 340 lots, in which 160 of them are single families and the townhouses, 180 townhouses. We have 18 acres of right-of-way, and then a dedication of right-of-way of 0.48. We got an area of 34, all the single families of 34.27 acres, and then the single the townhouses are 15.89 acres. The open space consists basically the centralized as far as active open space, which consists of a clubhouse, a pool, a half basketball court, tennis court, dog park, and there's also 24 boat slips located in this area here. No launch, just boat slips. So the total open space for this project is 58.13 acres, which is 45.8% of the total area of the project, in which the uplands open space is 36.29 acres.
So that's 36 acres that are not federal or state wetlands, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Good. Okay. 36.
The wetlands, they're in your booklet as well as here. There's two different types of hatching that shows the 404 and the state wetlands. And as Mr. Fuqua stated, we're providing the required 50-foot buffer, and then there's 25-foot voluntary buffer from all state. And if you look at this plan, I will assure you, 25 is the minimum. There's places in here where there's over 50% or 50 feet to 75 feet from state wetlands.
Federal wetlands.
Or federal wetlands.
Trying to help you.
All right, appreciate it. So the minimum requirements for the zoning is the minimum of 25 square feet for the single families and 7,500 square feet for the single families and 25. We have an average of 9,331 as an average for the single family lot. So they're definitely a little bit higher than the 7,500 square feet.
Of the 36 acres of the uplands that are dedicated open space, break that down. Is that including roads, sidewalks, or is that just?
That's
not including roads.
That's buffers. I mean, we have a little bit step ahead of me there.
I'm sorry. Were you going to come to that?
So just to go over the RPC calculation, we have 126.88 acres. You minus your wetlands at 17.25 acres, which is your state wetlands, your right-of-way, and you divide that by your 10,000 square feet for MRPC, and allowable units for this property is 396.66 units. And there again, the request for today is 340 lots total, with 160 single family and 180 townhouses. The subdivision itself, based on the two buffers that I mentioned, also has, in front of the townhouses, we have a 90-foot buffer, which is going to be landscaping and berm to kind of between Old Landing Road and Interior Road, 95 feet. between the single families from the old landing into the interior road. We have a range of 35 to 50 feet. And then there's also a 10-foot wide path, multi-use path, which would be along Old Landing Road, which is basically the same 10-foot wide path that is on the other side of the Old Landing that Sawgrass had to install. The interior roads are going to be built to Sussex County standards, and they will be privately maintained. The two access points are actually right across from the Sawgrass entrances. And it will be located in that vicinity.
Mr. Crouch, may I, President?
Certainly.
Question that is, these roads, you stated they're going to be to our specifications, but
yes.
Are these going to be privately owned, or are these going to be eventually DLDOT roads?
No, they're going to be privately owned.
Okay.
Just like pretty much every subdivision in Sussex County.
Okay.
But it'll be built to Sussex County standards and reviewed by Sussex County.
What is the width of the road? Do you recall?
The widths are 22 and then 2 foot of curb on both sides. So the right of way is 50 feet. There's sidewalks on both sides. And there'll be a 3 foot grass strip between the back of curbing and the sidewalk and 5 foot sidewalk on both sides.
No on street parking. So there's.
That's correct.
Right.
Thank you.
Proposed subdivision will not require a traffic impact study, and I'll let DJ, our traffic engineer, kind of speak on that as we go through the process. But a traffic operational analysis has been prepared and submitted to DLDOT. Stormwater management. The secretary signed an order in October 2008, which was implemented in November 2008. Which was adopted the final requirements for governing of the pollution control strategy regulations for the Indian River Bay, Rehoboth Bay, and Little Assiniboine Bay watersheds. Per the order, this project, as well as surrounding projects, fall within this low reduction area, which means 40% reduction in nitrogen and phosphorus. So basically,
Bless you.
Thank you, sir.
So.
And yes, he has. Thank you.
So with that being said, there is a process that we have to go through to meet those requirements based on this project, and this, which is the same process as Sawgrass South went through when they went through the approval process as well.
Now, I heard about these new stormwater regulations. Are you incorporating those new ones that I've heard that everybody's screaming about right now?
This is the pollution control strategy. It's totally separate than new stormwater management.
Okay,
this project,
I got it on my mind though. The new stormwater regulations. Is this designed with those?
This project will be designed under the old regs.
Oh.
Old reg.
Yes.
Why is that?
Is it your opinion that the old regs are what's in place right now that you're required to do? I mean, the new
yes.
regulations, can you get caught up in these new regulations?
We have 18 months to have this project approved, which is just June of 2015.
Okay. And the new regulation, well, that's for another question later on, but what would be the difference? Okay.
Based on the PCS requirements, the best management practices, which are means of a system or procedures that has been determined to be effective, practical means of preventing or reducing non-point source pollution, which means during the design process, we will be implementing bioswales, biofilters, infiltration and by in wet and dry ponds to meet those requirements. But there again, once the design process moves forward, that's what we'll be designing and submitting to the review agencies for approval to address the stormwater management for this site.
And I'm figuring that the folks that live there will have that responsibility to keep them up as usual. Is that the case?
Yes, that'll be part of the, as of every other development.
Right.
The management company usually takes care of those ponds. So that goes into the flooding aspect. You're going to hear, and we heard it Planning Commission, there's flooding issues. There's no doubt in my mind, and we've seen pictures, there's flooding issues. But the problem, the reason why there are flooding issues, because it's a hole. There's nowhere for the water to go when you go to these existing ponds that are out there. Once stormwater management is implemented and designed with interconnected ponds, a positive discharge, the stormwater manager, the water will have somewhere to go. Right now, it doesn't have anywhere to go. And just like I said, when this golf course was constructed back in the 60s, stormwater management did not exist. And it hasn't existed since this golf course has been operational. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying there'll be improvement? Is that what you're saying?
Most definitely.
Okay, got your point.
Mr. Crouch, if I may, the storm management will be approved by the Sussex Conservation District.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes, and also Sussex Engineering, too. Because the roads are, there again, you got drainage in your roads, which tie into the stormwater management facility, so all of it ties together.
Right. Thank you.
I got four of these.
Joan doesn't need one.
I know it all. Is that right? Well, there you go. In such a short time, too.
We
got one for the record.
You can keep one. You get Sam's one.
ERI, which actually did the wetlands delineation and also got the, I got an extra one.
Thank you.
ERI, which actually did the wetlands delineation and was a part of the JD request to the Corps, also was involved in a nutrient management analysis. What's in front of you today is a nutrient management analysis. And kind of like halfway through, we actually have the current nutrient management plan, which was performed and approved in, by Sussex Conservation District on January 21st of 2015. Golf courses are required to do this. And if you go through this, there's a lot of good information that shows the number of borings that they perform and analysis they did, which basically shows the applications that this golf course can put down, which really covers the nitrogen portion of this presentation. And in the front portion of it, ERI put together a report evaluating the differences between what is being applied now to what a residential subdivision does based on information from Delaware Livable Lawns Program, which is part of the EPA's process. With the 39 borings that they did and the information that they collected, the report compares existing conditions with proposed conditions, and they're looking at a difference, a reduction of 76% of nitrogen just between the two different land use applications. So that was another concern that was brought up in reference to nutrient management as well as wells too. Existing wells that are out there. So you're actually reducing the nitrogen by 76%. And even worst case scenario, you're reducing it by 56 to 60%. there's two scenarios that are broken out into the report that shows if there's a 40% impervious coverage on each lot, which you can't do by code, there's a 53 to 60% reduction. But based on the code, there's a reduction of 76%. The conclusion is that the change in land use will significantly reduce the nitrogen without the consideration of even stormwater management. Mm-hmm. As part of our stormwater management plan and preparation and design documents, we also have to do a calculation that shows what the reduction is based on stormwater management. So this is just the applications that exist today that are being applied today. And there again, that's how come we took the Sussex Conservation District. That way, you know, these are numbers that they did the work. This is what the owner has to abide by, and to compare the two different land uses.
Mr. President, may I ask him a question? If I may, real quick, Mr. Crouch. Quick question, and you may or may not have the answer, but on the nitrogens, because I know, obviously, we all want to protect our environment. That's a given. But the question that I would have as it relates specifically at the current land use as a golf course, the nitrogen. Golf courses use different fertilizers. They do different things. Has there been any evidence or any issues as it relates to the wetlands and the waterways, any runoff under its current use as a golf course?
This report, what they're allowed to do, right, per the Sussex Conservation District, is what they're doing today. So that's been approved by them.
Right.
So a residential subdivision, of course, uses 2 to 3 pounds per every 1,000 square feet, which compared to this golf course, based on the nutrient management plan that the Conservation District has signed as of January 21st of 2015, of 4 to 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet, you can just see how big of a difference that is.
That is if the homeowner follows directions on the bag of stuff
that they're supposed to. But that is correct.
But I mean, in summary, this packet basically states by shifting this over to residential community, i.e. less grass, correct? And less
application.
Correct. In theory, per this report, the waterways will be better protected.
Yes.
That's the summary of this.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for. Thank you.
But the community will be built certainly according to code, and I'm not hearing that there will be any advancement as far as impervious surfaces. And I'm not hearing that from you. You're talking about code requirements and how much the community as built will, how it will drain, how it will affect the bay or any other property.
Well, there again, per the PCS requirements, we have to have 40% nitrogen reduction.
Oh, yes.
40% phosphorus
reduction.
Anytime
you close a golf course, I think it's a good thing. I understand that. But you talked about the impervious surfaces that exist when the homes were built.
Yes.
And it would be built according to code. I'm just asking, has the developer or owner decided to create less impervious surfaces than what's in the code? Is that possible that you know of there? I'll ask somebody else. If that's not a question for you, I'm just...
Well, I can't sit up here and say how big of a house they're going to build on a lot, but the code's going to require them to
only build... It's going to be built to code as far as
you
gotta
have your setbacks,
surfaces,
your driveways, your utilities. It's basically going to be driven by that.
Right.
We took that, and it's in the report as far as even worst case scenario, 40% of impervious.
I understand that major. I understand your major issue, but I was just wondering when you said it would be built according to code as far as impervious surfaces. I was kind of hoping I would hear that it might be built over and above that, but I don't think I'm hearing it. So, all right.
Utilities are covered in Exhibit 3 and Exhibit 5, Mr. Fuqua pretty much talked about those as far as in the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District, in which we're allowed 4 units per acre, and Delaware Electric Co-op for electric service, and then the Rehoboth Beach Volunteer Fire Department for fire protection, and then, of course, Tidewater Utilities, which this project would be on Central Water. The next person I want to introduce is John D. Hines. He's president of John D. Hines and Associates, Inc. He's geotechnical and environmental consultants, which prepared a subsurface exploration and geotechnical consultant services. And want to show... Just before John gets up here, another concern that was brought up was hydric soils. And of course, like any other thing, hydric soils, can they or can they not be built on? And John has done a significant amount of work out of the site itself within the areas of hydric soils, and we'll be able to explain that a lot better than I will. But what I want to do is point out that we got townhouses up here. The question that came up at the Planning Commission was, you can't build in this area, which is hydric soils or poorly drained soils. Well, you can. You're going to hear that from Mr. Hines. But I want to make it clear that you got Sawgrass South, which already has townhouses built in this area, in two areas that have not well-drained soils, and there's potential of some more townhouses going on in this area. So just because it says poorly drained soils doesn't mean you cannot develop into them. And I'll let John...
Before you leave, just one quick one. When I was going through the plus comments or something, it referenced something about a wellhead well, and there was maybe a wellhead protection area.
Yeah, that's the...
Is there anything being done to...
Well, that well will be removed. It's the well for the clubhouse.
Right now?
The existing clubhouse, yes.
Basically capped.
Yes, it'll be removed per Denrex requirements. That's correct. And will not exist.
Okay.
I should have asked somebody else. You know, I'm wondering how being in investment level 3 affects all this. You know, I probably should have asked Mr. Fuqua about that.
I'm sure he'll come.
Because the state doesn't really go out as far as investing in projects in level 3 and less in level 4. I hope that hasn't happened here.
As Zach mentioned, I'm John Hines with Hines & Associates. I think I'm supposed to give my address. So I live 6308 Cherry Walk Road in Quantico, Maryland.
That's too bad. You should live in Sussex County.
No, it's a good state.
I have been licensed as an engineer in Delaware, however, since 1988.
All right,
I started Hines & Associates, a geotechnical consulting firm in Salisbury, on February 1st, 1989. So we just had an anniversary, our 26th anniversary. In the time that we've been in business, we've been doing work in Delaware. Probably almost half of our work is in Delaware. So we have a lot of experience on projects in Delaware, which includes residential subdivision projects like this one. We've done projects in Bethany Beach, Ocean View, Delaware. But really, we've done these kinds of projects throughout the Delmarva Peninsula for 26 years. As well as other geotechnical engineering projects for, we're the geotechnical engineer records for the Rehoboth Beach Water Tower, for example. We've got experience very locally here. I've done probably over 20 houses in the Rehoboth Yacht and Country Club, which has soil challenges. As Zach mentioned, there was questions about developing the poorly draining soils on this site. The key here shows that the degrees of severity are poorly draining soils, somewhat poorly draining soils, which is a darker blue like this, and then very poorly draining soils, which are like the darkest blue on here. We did test borings in the poorly draining soils that are on Osprey Point project site. As you can see, there's development at other sites on poorly draining soils also. And here, these are all residential houses, units. We were hired by DBF, but really for Osprey Point, to address the question of hydric soils. Hydric soils is the term is usually used with wetlands soils. These areas that we studied on this parcel are not defined wetlands areas. There's soils, there's areas of the sites that simply have poorly draining soils, which poorly draining soils are generally considered to be silty or clayey soils. So to address the question of whether or not we can build residences and roadways and infrastructure in the areas that have poorly draining soils, we drilled 20 test borings on the site. Did you submit our report?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just for the record, I passed down the report of the geotech report. It should be.
Thank you.
So we drilled 20 test borings on the property.
Oh, this is it.
But at the areas that's designated on the
this is it?
On the map overlay as the light blue areas on Osprey Point. And we spread borings evenly over those areas, less than 100 feet apart, so that we can get an idea of the consistency or variability of the soils and whether or not the soils were so bad that we wouldn't be able to build roadways or one to three story houses on them. We drilled borings using common geotechnical practices. In our business, we call them standard penetration test borings. When we drill the test borings, we collect soil samples and we run standard penetration tests and we measure groundwater conditions. So that the two issues with these poorly draining soils from a geotechnical standpoint are principally whether they'll support what we're going to build and whether the groundwater conditions are such that there's going to be groundwater issues if we try to build in those areas. The maps are generally correct. We found silt soils shallow over almost all of the 20 boring locations. And then below those, there was sands in most locations and some clays and silts deeper in others. We ran standard penetration tests, which gives us a idea of the consistency of the clay soils. And the standard penetration tests show that they're okay. They're good enough to support houses on normal spread footing foundations. So to develop these buildings on the property, the builder's not going to need to build on extraordinary foundations. They're going to be able to use common footing foundations, and they'll be able to support the structures without unnecessary settlement if they're proportioned properly. The other issue that we looked at closely was the groundwater conditions, which was brought up, and we found that the groundwater depths ranged from 2 to 5 feet at the boring locations.
Pretty high.
That's high, but locally, frost depth is 2 feet. So if the groundwater is 2 feet or lower, then the buildings can be built and still meet frost depth requirements, which is a major issue with foundation construction. So the areas are that we drilled all currently are within frost depth or the groundwater is deeper. And for safety, the sites can be raised slightly to improve the condition if there's a location, for example, that we didn't drill, which shows that there's groundwater that's slightly shallower, for example.
But I'm sure you would do that with consideration for your neighbors as you raise one of the sites, that they don't get, you know, they fall out of the water off that site. Yeah.
Well, that's the site design will be by, and the grading design mm-hmm. will be by Davis, Moen, and Friedel, so that will undergo a review, mm-hmm. Presumably, and approval prior to grading on the property.
You talked about groundwater. What about, I think there are some private wells outside, just outside this district. I'm wondering if you think there would be any danger of somehow jeopardizing the purity of the private wells that exist outside this area. Or I don't know if you've looked at that, but you talked about groundwater and how it might be affected. So, and I thought about the private wells and just wondering. I know we're going to have tide water and we'll have a central system, but it's not that. I don't think it's that way in other areas on that peninsula. So.
Well, we evaluated these sites.
Right, sure. You're looking at those.
The geotechnical considerations mm-hmm. for the proposed development, which mm-hmm. is for the 1 to 3 story mm-hmm. units.
Yeah.
Pavements, sidewalks, et cetera.
Right.
And we don't see the conditions such that they can't be built upon. Builders build with these type of soil conditions every day.
Mm-hmm.
When you did a study of the whole site, did you find anything unsuitable? Or did you find everything suitable for building, construction, for single-family homes or residential?
Well, from a geotechnical standpoint, we didn't find anything that's unbuildable. For example, on all the lots or at all the boring locations, there was topsoil. They would need to remove that in order to build, but that's common construction practice. So we didn't find anything that in the 20 borings that we drilled on this mapped hydric soil area. That
in the area that's highly unsuitable, which they plan homes in, right? On here, right? Where the dark blue?
Light blue.
Light blue?
Or light blue, whatever. Point out an area with what was the blue standing for?
The
unstable
key,
or
drainage.
The key is referring to
what was it? Poorly, severely.
Poorly draining soil.
Poorly draining, okay.
Right.
This is a poorly draining soil of a degree. The slightly darker is a even more poorly draining soil.
In the blue area on the Osprey site,
okay.
What would the water table be there? The 2 feet, 1.75 or the 2 foot depth?
At our boring locations, we encountered varying water depths of between 2 and 5 feet.
Okay.
And most of the depths, 17 of the depths, were 3 feet to 5 feet. Only 3 of the borings showed groundwater between 2 and 3 feet.
And where do you remember where those areas were? Where the water table is the highest and closest to the surface? Because when you dig a foundation, how deep is the foundation?
That's what I was talking about when I was discussing
right.
frost depth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The foundations will be, they usually construct them right at frost depth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2 feet to the bottom of footing below grade. The boring locations, 2, 8, and 20.
But it seems like if they trench out for the foundations, if they're doing block foundations, they'll fill in with water as they dig them, right?
No, they'll be above the groundwater. The excavations will stop before they encounter the groundwater.
Okay.
Mr. Hines, may I?
Yeah.
The couple questions. Number one is, what is the depth of the drilling that you've done in this specific community?
All of these borings were drilled to 15 and a half feet.
Okay. So 15 and a half feet throughout the community. And in these areas, the 2 to 5 feet depth, and again, this might be a question for the developer or whomever is going to be building, but are we looking at concrete slabs or are we looking at crawl spaces? Does anybody know that answer?
I do not.
Okay.
In either case, frost depth is the same.
Okay. And for my use and perhaps some others, I mean, you are here to talk about the soil quality as it relates to drainage and also the ability, the stability to build a home on, correct? So in the areas whereas it is difficult to drain, the blue area there, is there any concern as it relates to you should not build on that area, it's okay to build on there? What are the pros and cons as it relates to those two points in the blue areas? I'm not sure if my question was clear, but, you know, I know there's a lot of people here that have a lot of concerns, as do we, of course, but the questions really that I have as it relates to the soil, okay? I mean, we're talking about drainage, right? 2 to 5 feet depth, so there's a concern that, you know, if something's going to get drilled down, could there be a possibility of affecting other areas, surrounding communities, correct? And then the stability of building. So in those two areas, the drainage slash affecting other areas, perhaps wells, perhaps the quality of the waterways, and also the stability of building, those two areas. As it relates to your findings in this community, are there any concerns that you would have to those two with those two areas?
As it relates to our findings, I don't see any concerns that would make it prohibitive or that would cause a problem for the users of the property.
Mm-hmm.
If the builder uses the recommendations of the geotechnical engineer, then they'll be able to construct the buildings and the driveways and slabs on grades without having any problems.
And I haven't read through all of this. Of course, we just got this today. So is it in the plans, whereas your recommendations will be implemented? Are we aware of that? We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what the process is going to be, but typically this is a preliminary study. In our report, you'll see that we say that because we don't know the actual loads of the building, we held back recommendations that would be incorporated into a final report. So before they proceed with the building design, the architects and structural engineers should hire or engage a geotechnical engineer to drill additional borings and provide final recommendations so that they can size the foundations adequately, decide where to put drainage, et cetera.
And then with the earlier findings, I presume in your drilling you found no archaeology findings.
I did not.
Okay. Just thought I'd ask that question, seeing how there was a comment earlier right about that.
And Lawrence, while we're on that topic, is there any regulations that would require the eventual developer of this property, to do further study on what this gentleman has just told us about his preliminary study?
There would be... There's different types of studies for different type issues. If they come in for a building permit, they've got to meet certain criteria based on a building code. If it's streets, it's based on the county engineering department, public works division.
But on the type of foundations and different recommendations on, you know, this and that because of the types of soils, is there anything in the process that there's any kind of guarantee that Because the end user that purchased, the guy who purchases a home, is he going to have settlement issues, cracking foundations because things
settle? It would be based on a criteria of the building, the standard building code that we already have.
All right. So there's standard minimum. It's a minimal requirement.
Yeah, and there are minimums.
Right. Okay.
Well, I presented the information as I've prepared. If you have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.